Log Talk Radio.
Oh, this is new. A little button come up and says, end show now.
Oh, wow.
Let's see what that does. Goodbye, Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, we've still got 1,000 likes.
We were just talking about. This is all about wine, and we are live. Ron is with us, as he is every Thursday, from Florida State's Winery, located at, and you know, I just had the main thing. Oh, yeah. I was looking at the newsletter and trying to get some information off of that. But anyway, Florida State's Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or 8 miles east of Highway 41 at 25241 State Road 52 near Land O'Lakes. Near
Pasco
or,
County, Florida.
Pasco County, yeah, PASCO. And I don't know what that stands for. It's like Pass and then Company, but it's Pasco County. You got to check it out.
USA.
Yes, Florida, USA. For those of you listening to us in Europe still, and welcome. Let's see. I got to do the intro. We'll be back in 1 minute right after this, I think. As soon as it plays. Oh, you know, I hit the stop button.
Hit the button.
Yep.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
I know who that is.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, okay, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, I'm trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And
yeah.
Please welcome Ron.
That's right.
Thank you.
Excellent.
No bus people tonight. Too cold for them.
No. No. And we were just talking about this before we even joined 1000 Mics. So tonight we are continuing with South America, South American wines, before we start heading up a little bit north. But and you said something about discussing Chile, and I said, speaking of Chile, it's going to be chilly here, and no, it's going to be absolutely cold tonight.
Cold here.
Yes, absolutely cold, and right now we're sitting at 49 degrees in Zephyr Hills. Wind is 5 miles an hour, and very low humidity, though, so that's pretty good. But it's supposed to get down officially in Zephyr Hills. I've got a reading of 37 degrees for tonight, so it is...
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be worse than chilly. So anyway, yeah. This weekend, events coming up at the winery. And for those of you in Europe who turn us out because you have to go to bed because it's like midnight over there, then again, you might not be here Saturday. What am I thinking? But just in case you're making plans to be here Saturday, February 27th is Wine Festival, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We'll have all the details during a little break halfway during the show. Somewhere as soon as I get the cue from you, and we will give you more information. There's a lot going on, so stick around for that. Right now, here, do I have the applause? Yes, here.
Bus people are here.
Here's Ron.
Oh, a few bus people. Not a lot. It's cold.
This is about five. Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's cold to our standards. With apologies to anyone else listening in a colder climate, it is cold by our standards.
Yes. Very chilly.
Yeah. And speaking of chilly,
yes,
very good segue right into the country here.
We're getting good.
We're going to continue talking about Chile tonight. The country of Chile. We hit on it a little bit last week. I started to talk a little bit about Chile last week. I'll review a little bit. Then we're going to do some Argentina. Some great wine growing countries down there, by the way. Chilean wines and Argentinian wines are really, really catching on around the world, putting out some high quality grape, high quality wines, high quality varietals that are getting world renowned awards and discussion everywhere. A little review on Chile again, since we did start it last week, let me go through a couple of things here. The location of the country is a very long country. It's located on the western edge of South America. It runs from Brazil, way up north down to Patagonia, through the Patagonia areas in the south, all the way down to almost the tip of Chile. The actual tip of Chile is, or the tip of South America is Argentina, but almost to the tip. The country itself, about divided in half simply because of the Patagonia and all the glaciers and mountains and fjords and gulfs and everything to the south. So most of Chile population and everything else is in the northern half of the country. And I say northern half, it's all south of the equator. So when you go to the northern half, you're actually going closer to the heat and away from the cool of the south. Santiago, the capital of Chile, is located at the mouth or the northern end of the Central Valley. Central Valley is extends from about 32 degrees to 42 degrees latitude, northern part of Chile. This valley is formed by the Andes on the east and by a smaller ridge of mountains on the west. The Andes are a continuation of the, actually part of the big chain that starts up in Alaska and northern Canada and comes all the way down through Canada and the United States and through Mexico and on down. Part of the big rift that was created eons ago when the plates hit each other and formed mountains. And the Andes are the tall range to the east, which isolates Chile quite a bit as far as climate and everything else. It just puts a wall basically there. And then the smaller range that is a little bit to the west of the valley, on the western side of the valley, creates the Central Valley of Chile, which is the growing area, the main growing region. The capital of Santiago is located at the northern end of it. This was established by the Spaniards way back when they first came over in 15, in the late 1500s. And they established the areas of the town of Santiago. The Central Valley is fed by mountain streams or mountain rivers coming off the Andes, flowing to the west. They have cut valleys through the smaller range, and this has given the Central Valley the ability to create great growing conditions, not just for grapes, but for all crops. It is has been established as an irrigation, or not established, but as the early Incas used a lot of this area here to create canals and dams and storage lakes and tanks and stuff, and actually created a good network of watering system to feed the Central Valley for crop growth and much to our surprise, grapevines. So the a lot of the not only do they have crops, but the big majority of grapevines to the Central Valley. The viticulture area has been growing by leaps and bounds. Something that is quite interesting about the viticulture area of Central Valley, a Frenchman in the early 1830s, a Frenchman by the name of Claude Gay, got the backing of the Chilean government to establish a nursery for botanical species from around the world. He called it the Quinta Normal, and the purpose of it was to collect clippings, seeds, and plants from around the world. Basically a storage center, a clearinghouse, if you will, a storage center for all sorts of different plants and everything. One of the things he did bring in, one thing that he got, was a big, complete variety of grapes and plants from around the world. All also came in, and he did quite a major job of collecting everything. Well, then in the late 1880s, when phylloxera hit Europe, and particularly France, France knew that Chile had a lot of these plants that they had saved from Chile, and so a lot of the French grapevines that were lost during the big phloxera outbreak of late 1800s was replenished by Chilean plants that this Frenchman called Gay had originally gathered up. So he is saved a lot of the varieties that we are now used to coming out of France and was able to give them back to France. Chile is phylloxera-free. Chile has been phylloxera-free. They are, again, their location with the mountains on one side, the ocean on the other, and Patagonia to the south, they pretty much avoided any incidents of phylloxera, and they are very careful to guard against that, too. It's they are one of the few countries in the world that is only one that are now planted on their own rootstock and not using an American rootstock to stop the phylloxera. The landscape climate in Chile, most of the vineyards are located between 32 degrees, 30 minutes south latitude and 38 degrees south latitude. And this is about the same distance south of the equator, as most of the plantings are, you find in the vineyards north of the equator. So you're getting similar climates in there. But the effect of the Pacific Ocean, Pacific currents coming up the coast of Chile, blowing through the valleys into the Central Valley. The valleys up and down Chile to create the Central that connect onto the Central Valley, they're from the rivers that flow off the Andes. Now, the furthest north you're going to get in any of these areas, and the furthest valley that you're going to find, is the Coquimbo, I believe it's pronounced Coquimbo Valley. This is the northernmost region of Chile that's growing grapes. Actually, too hot to grow any quality grapes because of the location of it. It's still, being so far north, it is still a little bit too far north to get anything, but they do make a drink called the Pisco, P-I-S-C-O. Pisco is aguardiente, is the other pronunciation for it, which literally means fire water. It's a distilled Muscat and Pedro Ximenez grape, and it's actually distilled like fire water, I guess the best way to say it. Comes in four categories. Gran Pisco, G-R-A-N Pisco, is 43% alcohol by volume. You have the Reservado, which is 40% alcohol, Especial, which is an alcohol, and Selección, which is 30% alcohol. And it's used as an aperitif, said to be just a phenomenal aperitif. I've never had the opportunity to have a Pisco. But this is from the northernmost region, the northernmost growing region of Chile. It's a, and most of Chile is starting to get into a little bit more modernization. Chile had some problems for a while. When people came over from England, Germany, Italy, and started buy land and started to make all sorts of vineyards all up and down the Central Valley there in areas that would grow it. And the consumption increased to the point where it was becoming really quite a thing. So the government started to tax the sales of it. As the taxes increased, the investments and the land decreased. And so the wine industry took a hard hit back in toward the end of the 1960s. The quality fell, taxation was so expensive, and so they stopped doing a lot of grapevines. And then again, in the late 1980s, it started to pick up again. Were able to names started to move into the country, bigger names that we're familiar with. A lot of American wine growers and French wine growers came in and got some land and started putting it in, and it helped boost the growing areas of it, and the taxations, they kept the taxation down to a reasonable amount, so it was more attractive. lot of the modernization of the vineyards and the techniques that they're using in the vineyards hit about that time, too. The arrival of the grapevine, I'm a little history of the grapevine into Chile. The capital, Santiago, actually called Santiago de Chile, but that was when they first formed it, was at the top of the Central Valley. And viticulture was not really the main thing for Chile when the Spaniards first came over there. Gold was what was so attractive. And this is what got a lot of people into Chile and what attracted everyone to Chile. Not unlike California, and the arrival of gold over there. The grapevines weren't really the primary thing. It was more the gold. The Spanish made a since they controlled Chile, they made an edict, a law that you couldn't grow grapes. And so the few vineyards that were around, the few grapevines that were being grown by the few farmers here and there around the areas. And the Spanish made this law so that it wouldn't go in conflict in India and Chile with the Iberian Peninsula, which was where Spain was getting and growing most of their grapes. How it was ever enforced is still questionable. They think that because it was so far away, it really wasn't enforced, and that's why we have so many older grapevines in Chile, because a lot of the farmers were growing grapes as a secondary crop, and they were making wines for personal use and around the areas and all that. Because the church was so strong in Chile also, a lot of the churches had vineyards and had areas where they were growing because they had to have it for communion. And so the grape that was grown actually proliferated in New Spain, which became Mexico, was the grape called the Mission, known as the Mission grape. And this variety is the same one known as the Pais, or P-A-I-S, in Chile, or the Criolla Chica in Argentina. A light, nondescript grape that makes for just a Mexican, which was perfect for the for communion services in the church. And then as more settlers came over from Europe and the migration increased, grape growing became more established with the farmers and all that. And then winemaking, along with grape growing, became more prominent. And then in 1678, the governor of Chile asked the government of Spain to withdraw the edict that they couldn't grow grapes, and so they did, and it started to proliferate much more in Chile, throughout Chile at the time. And because of the method, they use a raised vineyard, trellis vineyard type method of most of the grapes, and because of the humidity and heat, it really helps to keep the downy mildew and powdery mildew off the grapes, and it makes for a bigger crops and a much more prolific crop, actually more so than in Europe itself because of the temperatures and stuff. The Chile recently started planting a lot of white grapes. The areas of Casablanca have been putting, excuse me, areas of Casablanca, which is north of Santiago, the same valley, same area as Aconcagua Valley. And the Aconcagua Valley is actually the valley where we had our wines come from for a while. We got a shipment from Chile. We've all sold out of actually all of them. We got ourselves a Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Carmenere from Chile, and we've sold all of them. But they came from the Aconcagua Valley, from Vina San Esteban, name of the winery down there, as a matter of fact. Nice winery on our website. If all of you like to check out a nice little video of Vina San Esteban winery in Chile, a real nice little short video of it on our website, and we'll give you the website address later in the show. So the I was talking about, Casablanca Valley. Started to, a bit for the north, but it was cooled a lot by the maritime influence. And so because of that, they started planting Sauvignon Blanc. And the Sauvignon Blanc caught on very well in that area. They're getting some fantastic Sauvignon Blancs. And the Sauvignon Blancs that they were making there became a hit in the United States and Britain, especially at wine bars, health club circuits, stuff like that. And so this really caught on quite well for the Chilean Sauvignon Blanc, and it's exploded in their growing and making of it. And like I say, a lot of the big names from around the world are now moving in and making some really great super wines in Chile. Names like the Chateau Lafite Rothschild, Chateau Menthon Rothschild, Le Turon, Robert Mondavi. These are some of the big names in wine that almost everybody is now buying land and working on making some big wines out of Chile, and they are getting themselves some phenomenal names from it. The Sauvignon Blanc, still a big name in Chile. If you're looking at reds coming out of Chile, Merlot and Carmenere probably would be the ones that would give you the best buy and best value. Carmenere, I mentioned Carmenere before and in past programs. It's surprising that it's been like, what, a year we've been doing these programs now, mm-hmm. So it's been some time since I mentioned. But Carmenere was originally grown in the over in France, in the areas of Beaujolais regions of France. It was lost. Carmenere grape is not real high. It's a lower yielding grape. It's a great grape, but lower yielding. And because of the lower yield, the French didn't pursue planting and didn't continue to plant it. But when it was brought over from France to Chile, they planted it. But it was mixed up within the Merlot vineyards. And so for many years, they thought it was Merlot. Chile was getting a reputation back before they discovered that it was Carmenere mixed in there as making this unique type of Merlot, a strange aroma taste Merlot that was just really catching on, and people were attributing the soil, attributing all sorts of stuff to this. And then in the late 1980s, early 1990s, it was discovered that there was a different grape mixed in with the Merlot. Now, there's three stories floating around about how it was discovered. One story is that the government discovered it during testing for diseases. Another one was that Robert Mondavi discovered it when he was there. Third one was that the University of Chile at Santiago happened to discover it. I don't know. I've heard all three stories just about evenly, and I've read all three evenly, so who knows who discovered it and who really cares, basically. It was discovered. And so they divided up and came out with the Carmenere wine. It's a unique wine. It's got real deep flavored wine, smooth, sort of a carmen, well, hence Carmenere, carmen colored to the wine. It is not real, real heavy. It's just I get a lot of black pepper out of it. I've had quite a few different Carmeneres. Almost all of them gave this little black pepper nose to it and black pepper taste to it, which was just absolutely phenomenal. I love a Carmenere. Just this full mouthfeel, a lot of flavors, but not a whole lot of acid. It doesn't just overpower with the acid. And it's just a wonderful grape. The Veramonte Winery said that the Carmenere is a great grape, but he said it is rather one-dimensional. We have three choices: eliminate it, promote it as our national grape, or use it as a unique component in blends. He said, I think the future lies in our last option. And it is used for blending with Cabs and Merlots quite extensively. But if you go and look for South American wines and you look in the Chilean section, you will see Carmeneres by themselves, and I highly recommend it. It is really, really an interesting wine, just a really nice wine. I totally enjoy the Carmenere, and I created a lot of people, a lot of followers of our Carmenere when we had it. We're sold out of it, and I'm sad to say we probably won't get any more, but it is just a wonderful grape. So I want to talk about Carmier for a second there, but that's Chile, almost exclusively a Chilean grape. Although there is a small winery, and if there's anybody out there that is listening to this and knows differently, let me know. Hopefully, you all are popping here in IMS or whatever. We're still going to be on for another half hour. So, I do know that there's a little small winery outside of Walla Walla, Washington, and they have some Carmenere planted. In fact, I just had a couple come into the winery last week, or the first of this week it was. They came in Monday. They'd been in before about 5 years ago, and they came back again to pick up some wines. And they were from Washington State, and he said that that little winery up there still does grow some Carmenere, and he uses it for blending. So there is some Carmenere being grown in Walla Walla, Washington, around Walla Walla. But if anyone knows of anything else, please let me know. I'd love to hear about it. Central Valleys of Chile, the most popular, most well-known, is the Mayopo Valley. This is north, actually not really north, it's around Santiago. You can actually, in some of the hotels staying at in Santiago, you can see grapevines on the local hills and stuff from that are grown in the Mayopo Valley. The Contra de Toro winery is in this valley. It is the one that most everyone's familiar with, that most everyone knows about it. They're making some excellent Cabernet Sauvignons, some nice Sauvignon Blancs. They have some great Merlots coming out of Concha de Toro. They have over 8,150 acres, a lot of acreage planted, and a big variety that's 3,300 hectares. A big area there that from Concha de Toro. And they have just recently linked up with Chateau Monton Rothschild to produce an Alma Viva. Alma Viva is a brand, and they're coming out with some heavily oaked big from there, and definitely an improvement, and also some improvement in prices too. We always talk about the inexpensiveness of Chilean wines, and there are some, like this particular one that is worked with Monton Rothschild, is rather expensive. The Rapel Valley, it's a little bit further south and slightly cooler than the Mayopo Valley, and it's divided into subdivisions, with the northern one being not quite as cool as the southern areas. The wineries are making some great Sauvignon Blancs, as almost all of them are. I mean, again, it's just a great Sauvignon Blanc. A lot of Cabernet Sauvignon. They're making some big quality Cabernet Sauvignons that are with a lot of fruit, a lot of flavor to it. The Pinot Noir is starting to catch on in the Southern Valley, the southern section of the Rapel Valley. The Pinot Noir is a nice fruity Pinot Noir coming out of that. The Mallow Valley. This is located, and let me get my map here. I just had it and I lost it. The Mall Valley is south of the Rapel Valley, and it is a again a little bit cooler, and the vineyards are to the east. Up on the Andes a little bit more, which is making for a cooler climate. And because of that, the Sauvignon Blanc is just very, very nice coming out of there, with a little bit of flintiness and some good acid. The Cabernet Sauvignon is just a super premium cab coming out from that area, too. They're doing some real Malbec from the area, Malbec being around for a long time. Casablanca Valley, plantings there just began in the early 1980s. It's rather young, concentrating on white grapes. This is, again, further south. It's a new market, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, red grapes, mostly wipes, though they're concentrated, the valley's been concentrating on wipes. The Biobío Valley, this is the southernmost viticulture region of Chile, and it is used to be entirely dedicated to a grape called the Muscatel de Alejandra, and also the Peas. Local unknown grapes, but recently the valley is growing drawing in more and more noted growers and drawing in more and more foreign growers, and because of that they're starting to put in the varietals that we are familiar with, Malverde and Voynay being probably the most common ones right now. So I'm going to take myself a short sip of wine here. Let us throw in our thing for the market. We'll go into Argentina in a second.
All right.
Coming up this Saturday, it's Wine Festival, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. Enjoy live music, food, homemade crafts, and unique gift items, and more. And, of course, world-class wines from Florida Estates Winery. This event is free and open to the public. Enjoy the great outdoor setting at the winery this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wine Festival, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call 813-996-2113 or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. It's always a great day at Florida Estates Winery.
Wow. Thank you. And you can email us at corp, C-O-R-P, at Fleun, F-L-E-W-N, .com.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any questions, you can get it on that way. And I say, I have to point this out. I just thought of this. I say corp at Fleun.com. There was an article in the paper a while back, and we say at, the A with the little circle around it, but different countries in the world call it all sorts of different names.
Oh.
It's not at all these other countries. They have different names for this stuff, and it just I just thought that was extremely interesting. We say for the little thing our email address at, but there is some strange, well, to us, strange names that they mention around the world. So
yeah,
so it's a little A with the circle around it for all of these who don't know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Interesting. Okay.
Argentina. Argentina is located just to the immediate east of Chile. Again, a long country. Argentina is probably has more microclimates, more diversity in it than almost any country in the world. For I mean, they've got to the far, far south, they've got glaciers and the freezing waters and all that. They've got the mountain range that actually the Andes that runs to the east of Chile is running on the west of Argentina. They've got rainforest to the far north on the borders of Brazil. They've got deserts. It is a very, very diversified country. They've also got Buenos Aires, which is, I've never been there from what I understand it, just absolutely gorgeous city, located in the north-central part of the country on the coast. Now, when we talk about Argentinian wines and Argentinian growth, it is really a big grape-growing country, an amazingly large grape-growing country. Ranks with Chile as the fourth largest wine producer in the world, after Italy, France, and Spain in that order, and then the United States and Argentina tie for fourth place. It is a big wine growing region, but it hasn't been but in the last 25 years or so that they've exported any wine. Most all of the wine was consumed in Argentina. And recently, they've started to find an international market for the wines, and booming, exploding internationally because of how they've been promoting themselves and how good the wines are. The wine region of Mendoza was established back in the 16th century, and most of these were made for early consumption. But as things progressed until around the 1880s, a French botanist by the name of Puget, I'm not sure how it's pronounced for sure, introduced the first French varieties, and he chose the Mendoza site as the area to plant these grapes, and they thrived. It was a phenomenally good climate, a phenomenally good area. What he planted more than anything was a grape called La Uva Francesca, Francesa. And the La Uva Francesca is the French grape called the Malbec. And if you want, I tell people, I recommend this all the time. If you want to get a phenomenal Malbec, two places. Number one, Oregon, and number two, Argentina. And not particularly in that order. There are some phenomenal Malbecs coming out of Argentina right now. It's really a great wine coming from there. Plantations around Mendoza City have grown, and they're getting bigger and bigger. Most of them are higher up onto the Andes on plateaus and all that, around 2,600 feet or so, about 800 meters above sea level. And it's producing a Malbec that is just a full-colored, vibrant, ages well, it survives well in the barrel, the bottle, even the leather pouches that they carry. The Malbec is doing quite well there. Once the completion of the rail system from Mendoza to Buenos Aires, wine activity exploded in Argentina. And this also, one of the reasons that a lot of the area started to make more and more wine, because it did explode there, and once it got to Buenos Aires, it was able to be shipped around the world a lot more, United States and France and different places. Argentinian consumption is up around 26.5 gallons per person, or 100 liters per person. Very high considering the size of the country and all the wine. This is why the wine should continue to be consumed in Argentina. Good quality vineyards all over. There's some award-winning Malbec plots that are still being grown. There's a lot of Malbec that was plowed under after the wine started traveling around the world, and let me get my mind caught back up here. There's a lot of Malbec plantings around, in Argentina that were plowed under to make room for faster growing, more prolific grapevines, because once they started shipping around the world, they found that the market exploded and they couldn't keep up with the drinking and the shipping, so they put a lower quality grape, which actually worked against them. You know, the yields were there, but the grape wasn't what people were used to, so therefore it the old catch 22. They quit buying it, and so the collapse began around 1980, and the national economy started to struggle, and Argentina started to have political unrest, and they started to have problems export and import, and the grape vines started to collapse, and a lot of the wine bodegas or wine farms, wine ranches started to collapse. And by the late 1980s, the wine industry really was in bad shape in Argentina. A lot of the vineyards were overgrown. A lot of the houses were abandoned. There was a lot of grape vines were just not ended and just being ignored. And it looked bad for the Argentinian grape industry. But they have, because of political and economic problems, it was really a low, low time in the late 1980s. But it has started to pick up since then, and they're starting to put a little bit more effort into the grapes, and a little bit more money into it, and they've also started to get more influence from out of the country. A lot of French growers, a lot of American growers. Again, Robert Mondavi is also opening up an enormous vineyard in Argentina that he has planted a lot of Malbec in. And I understand Pinot Noir and Cabernet Sauvignon also. The Argentinian grapevines are planted basically in the central western part of the country. The country, is like I mentioned at the beginning of Argentina, is very large, a very diverse country as far as what's contained in it. Like also 6 continents crammed into one country sometimes. It goes from the tropics of Capricorn, which is 21 degrees 46 minutes north, to latitude of 55 degrees 3 minutes south. And it goes from sea level up to the highest mountain, which is now Mount Aconcagua at 22,816 feet, or 6,969 meters. A very diverse climate and very large country with all these climates. So the vineyards being basically in the eastern, or I'm sorry, in the western central part of the state of the country. The Argentinian vineyards have not been affected by phylloxera. I said earlier that Chile was the only one and one other country. It's not Argentina. Argentina has been checked, and you pull up a grapevine in Argentina in the roots, and you will find phylloxera and the mites of the phylloxera mite clinging to the grapevines, but it hasn't devastated the grapevines. And the reason for this is because of the flooding, the flood irrigation that is being used to water the grapevines. The phylloxera mite does not like the floods during the flood times, and because of that, it doesn't proliferate and it doesn't destroy the grapevines. The flooding comes from the mountains. It flows off the Andes and floods down. They flood the vineyards, which also helps with minerals and vitamins and all that within the thing, and it waters the plants. But phylloxera is tested positive. But the problem with global warming, I'm not trying to preach one way or the other here, just simply saying that global warming is affecting Argentina a lot, because they're not getting as much runoff from the Andes because of the warmer weather, which is cutting down on the snowfall, which is cutting down the water. And so a lot of the vineyards are having to go to drip irrigation. And since they're going to drip irrigation, it is not fighting the phylloxera mites, and they're starting to attack some of the grapevines. So a lot of the growers that are having were on the edge there are now starting to graft onto the resistant American rootstock to stop the phylloxera from attacking it. Regions of Argentina, there's 15 geographically different regions. Mendoza is responsible for about 95% of all the exports and about 75% of all the wine grown in Argentina. Mendoza is located just due east over Santiago, right in just about due west of Buenos Aires on the other side of the country. Santiago and Buenos Aires are really pretty much in the same latitude. And the Mendoza growing region is the big one. This is the one that grows most all the grapes for Chile. It's where the grapes were first planted. San Juan, just to the north of Mendoza, is a wine city. A lot of the economy is based on wine and shipping and export and import. The local grape, the Toronto's Riojana, is a Toronto's grape, a light fruity wine. Again, a lot of local people drink it, and a lot of wine is consumed within there. Red wines are growing in popularity in the area. These salt area, many valleys, many areas there, the salt area, just south of Mendoza. Growers are doing a lot of varieties that are from France, but not as much. I shouldn't say not as much. They're doing a lot of varieties from France, but they're still using a lot of their grapes that they've had for quite some time there. The Mendoza wine region is divided into three areas, and they are two of Mendoza's areas are a DO area, and these are Denomination de Origin, again, a national classification for vineyards. They use a variety of grapes, a big, big variety of grapes. Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Malbec, a grape called the Bonarda, and also the Tempranillo. These are all planted around there. Different areas of the Mendoza region also are putting out Syrah, Sangiovese, Chenin Blanc, Chardonnay, Malbec, Merlot, Bonardo. A big variety. It's a great growing region, and they are putting out an enormous amount of grapes from that region. It is also, there are other smaller wine growing regions besides the Mendoza region. To the south of Mendoza, actually quite a ways to the south of Mendoza, there's an area called the Rio Negro, and this is a region that is north of Patagonia, north and east of Patagonia. About 3% of total production of grapes from the country is from there. And it's sort of a desert soil type thing. And because of the desert soil, the grapes struggle a little bit more, which makes for a bit more quality in the grapes and a little bit more character. Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc are probably they are the majority of grape growing in that region. Central West region, which is Mendoza, San Juan, and all that, about 90% of all grapes coming out of there. The Northwest region, this is north of Mendoza. This includes the Salta region, which I just mentioned, north of the Rojo area and the northernmost vineyard area in Argentina. That area grows a lot of Sauvignon Blanc, some of the red grape varieties, but the heat doesn't match well, obviously, with the red grapes, and so you're going to get a lot of Sauvignon Blanc, some Chardonnay growing out of there, and some of the local grape varieties. And then south of the Salta region is the La Rojo, Rioja, L-A-R-I-O-J-A, La Rioja region. This is about 4% of all grapes in Chile. Argentina. Again, Mendoza is the majority area for growing grapes in Argentina, and so in all these other areas are rather small areas. Just south of our Rio area and north of Mendoza is the San Juan area, and San Juan is an extension coming up from the Mendoza area, same soil, same type of growth and everything. Grapes that are grown in Chile, grapes that are grown in Argentina, reds, usually Malbec, which is well known, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, Merlot, Bonarda, Tempranillo, and Sangiovese. The whites include Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, Sauvignon, and Torontes. Malbec is the grape coming out of Chile. I mean, I said a couple times already, and I have to emphasize this again. If you can get wine from Chile, get a Carmenere. If you're going to get wine from Argentina, then the Malbec is the grape to get out of there. That in South America. Now, we have a few minutes, and I'm going to introduce you into some of what we're going to talk about next week. Before we go into the United States, and before we are actually North America, I shouldn't say the United States because Canada is included in that. Before we go into North America, I want to talk a little bit about some of the wines that are grown in areas that you don't think too much about wine. And Cambodia is one of them. And I'm going to talk just for a few minutes here on Cambodian wines, and then we can wrap this up. Cambodia, there is one winery in Cambodia. One man decided to make wine in Cambodia. The Chan Thai Chahong, I believe it's pronounced, and he decided that he would make a wine. Cambodia was a former French colony, and now it is its own country, obviously. But there's been no wineries, no any winemaking or anything out of Cambodia. One of the reasons is because of its location. Cambodia is located due west of Vietnam. Vietnam's right on the water there, very humid, very hot. Cambodia also has water to the south, a lot of humidity in the country, a tremendous amount of humidity. I was over there in Vietnam in 1970, and I'll never forget waking up in the morning, and just the movement of opening my eyes was enough to make my body break out in sweat. It was just, the humidity was unbelievable. And this is the way the country is. And so growing grapes of any type is plagued by all sorts of mildews and all sorts of into the clusters of grapes. And grapes, just in their just the nature of the beast and the fact that they are cluster grapes, are going to create these molds and give perfect growing areas for this. But one farmer decided that he would make a wine. He took grape vines from his farm and decided that he would grow them in the rice fields and orange groves, which are close to a river that is typically swollen from the monsoon rains every year. And he said, and I quote, I was thinking about starting a winery. I was only thinking about growing grapes because the neighboring countries produce them. And he was looking at both Vietnam and Thailand, which produce grapes. And so he figured, hey, you know, if they can do it, then I can do it. And so he started out doing it. And he had a varying degrees of success over the years. Sometimes the grapes would grow, sometimes they wouldn't, and he would have someone that would die and someone that would survive, and he battled back and forth. And then in 2000, he planted his first vines that he got from Thailand, and plus a year later, he planted some that his brother sent over from France. And when they started to grow, and they grew very quickly. Normally grapevines take about 5 years to get your full crop, and he was getting a tremendous crop by his second year. But they did not bring the money to him that he had hoped that they would. Grapes were just sort of like another harvest that was not helping him and his family. He doesn't drink himself, but he decided that he would make a wine. So at the end of 2004, he had a harvest of 5 tons of grapes, and quite well with it. And so he decided to start making a wine from that. And he started putting different grapes in the ground, and he's bought extra land, and he's got over 5 acres now divided into 3 separate farms. The grapevines he's got in the ground is called a Black Queen, a Shiraz, and then Kyoho, and he said that growing these, he had a lot of problems with, he put 50 Chenin Blanc grapes in the ground, and they withered up and died. He had no idea why, no reason why they just disappeared. He blamed it on the weather and the tropical climate, and that there was nothing to do with it. Finally, he started to make some wine. He took his plastic containers and put the grapes in there and started to ferment, put some French oak chips to give it a little bit of oak. He kept the wines cooled. because it was hard to get a stable supply of electricity. He had problems keeping it at a good level. After 5 months of fermentation, he figured it was had enough flavor to bottle. So instead of aging it for years, like is recommended, he aged it for 5 months. And he didn't have the money to put it together, so everybody around the family, around the area that he lived, all came together and was bottling all the wines for him so that he can make the wines. And it was quite pleasant. People liked it, and he was selling it, and he was making enough money for his family. So he started buying more land around the area so that he can plant more grapevines. But he said that the taxes on the land and taxes on making his grape and his wines were too expensive, so he applied to the government for a tax-free status, and the government granting one for 3 to 5 years, and he's still getting a tax-free status so that he can grow his grapes and make his grape wine. And he's getting visitors from all over the world coming to taste his wine and stay in the town and help with some of the problems he has and help put stuff together and all that. They're saying it's a sweet wine, not a rosé particularly, that is becoming real popular, sort of a sweet made with the Black Queen. It's drinkable. It's not phenomenal wine, but something that is becoming really something that's catching on. And people in the area of Cambodia, around his area, is starting to become quite proud of and help him with it. And it's putting Cambodia on the map a little bit as a area that you can actually get wine. And so I wanted to cover that. Next week we'll go on to some other little areas in there, Vietnam and Korea and China and Philippines and all sorts of stuff. Interesting, interesting areas that make wine that we would never consider and never.
Yeah, very interesting. All right.
Thank you.
Apparently the hands in our audience are a little bit numb right now because of the temperatures, but
that's no doubt. Yeah,
yeah, 46 degrees out there. So, yeah, very interesting. Population of Cambodia? Anybody? Anybody? You in the back row? That's right. 14,699,000.
Wow, roughly. That's a lot.
Yeah, and that was in 2008. So by now it's 18 million. I have no idea, but that's interesting. I mean, one winery for all those people.
One winery in the country, and it's new, 2000. He planted these grapes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that was really quite interesting.
So next week we're gonna kind of cover some of these miscellaneous countries, I guess.
Miscellaneous countries and move into North America.
Wow. Okay. And here we go.
We can talk a lot about North America. Every state in the nation has a winery.
Oh, so there's a lot. Okay.
A lot in North America. Yeah.
Okay. Well, right now we're only talking about what's happening this weekend at Florida State's Winery, and Winefest is coming up this Saturday, so definitely want to check that out, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and you have a whole host of vendors that are going to be out there, and quite a few. You have also music. Sam Osborne, I believe, is going to be out there again.
Sam will be back, yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. Avon will be represented there. You're going to have just come out to the winery, and we'll give you the location again. It's 25241 State Road 52, Land O'Lakes, and I'm being pushed here. The timer's clicking off again. It's 4 miles west of Interstate 75 off of exit 285 off of I-75, and you go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs for the winery. You turn in there. Winery's open daily from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., every day except major holidays. I don't see anything right around the corner right now, but anyway.
No majors, no.
Yeah, no majors. So 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for the Wine Fest on Saturday. Oh, you're counting down. Give them a call direct at 813. Is the area code 813-92113. Or send them an email at corp, the little at sign. corp at floon.com, C-O-R-P, the at sign, F-L-E-W-N.com. Visit them on the web at floridaestateswines.com. You can also, there's also a link, I believe, to go to the Facebook page. They are on Facebook. You can search for Florida States Winery, And subscribe to the newsletter. The newsletter has all kinds of information that comes up, and they don't bombard you with spam or anything. I've been getting it for over a year now. Great newsletter. They tell you about the upcoming classes, the wine test, recipes, little information on the wine facts and everything. And join us next Thursday at 7 p.m. here. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye, Skype.
That went fast. Is it still on? Show is on, but not streaming.
We're still on. Yeah, but wow. We still got 1,000 mics.
Yes, they're getting that bonus.
The bonus time.
Absolutely.
So, 1,000 mics coming.